You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
This is the Read to Lead podcast, episode 525.
Creativity is one of these things that we tend to put up in a pedestal and say, like, some people are so creative, you know, and we even in the design and marketing world, some folks are referred to as creatives, as though this was a skill that only some people have, but all of us are creative, right?
Better thinking makes you a better person, and few things extend your mind as quickly and powerfully as the humble note. Notes let you fulfill commitments, manage complicated projects, and make your ideas real. Digital notes take you even further. By using the right tools and a bit of discipline, you can cultivate a personal knowledge garden where your thinking will blossom. Hi, I'm Jeff, and this is the Read to Lead podcast, the podcast that's dedicated to your personal and professional growth. Each week, I interview a successful and inspiring author to dig into their latest book and their unique insights on a number of different topics. And as you may have guessed, our theme this week is all about not just note taking, but note making. And we'll talk about the differences between those two as well with our special guest, Jorge Arango, author of Duly Noted, Extend Your Mind Through Connected Notes. I'll be asking Jorge to share about what's crucial for us to know in order to take better notes, how to connect notes to create a network of ideas, why it's important for us to share our thinking with others along the way, and much more. This topic is a very popular topic. In fact, probably the most popular topic we discuss in the Read to Lead community, and specifically with Read to Lead Plus members. In fact, just last week, members met together online privately with me and today's guest, Jorge Arango, to ask all sorts of questions around this topic. The week prior to that, I even led an Ask Me Anything session on the topic of notes with members of our community. If this sounds right up your alley and you'd like to think about joining our community with a Read to Lead Plus membership, just go to this website, jeffbrown.me, and sign up for a 2-week free trial right now of Read to Lead Plus. You get not only access to those 2 live sessions each month, but a number of book summaries inside the community, networking opportunities, a chance to be spotlighted in front of the entire community, and much, much more. Again, it's jeffbrown.me to find out more and to start your free 2-week trial today. Again, that's jeffbrown.me. Jorge Arango is an information architect, author, and educator. For the past 3 decades, he's used architectural thinking to bring clarity and direction to digital projects for clients, ranging from nonprofits to Fortune 500 companies. He's the author of Living in Information, Responsible Design for Digital Places, and co-author of Information Architecture for the Web and Beyond, and host of the Informed Life podcast. Besides consulting, writing, and podcasting, Jorge also teaches in the Graduate Interaction Design Program at the California College of the Arts. His brand new book, and the one we're diving into today, is called Duly Noted, Extend Your Mind Through Connected Notes. Well, Jorge, I'm delighted to have you here for the Read to Lead podcast. For those who aren't a part of my online community, the Read to Lead Plus community, this is not our first time chatting about this book. We did that just a few days ago. Had some folks in the community asking you some tough questions. You did great. Got a lot of great feedback on that session. But excited to have you here so that everyone else can learn from your expertise and your knowledge. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a treat to be back talking with you.
Well, I think a good place to start is to ask you to kind of help contrast the difference between taking notes and making notes. And this is a distinction near and dear to my heart. When I first launched my note course a couple of years ago, I was calling it Note Taking Mastery. And then right before I launched it, I changed the name to Note Making Mastery, because really at the end of the day, I wanted people leaving that course knowing more than just how to take better notes, but then what to do with them. So how would you distinguish between the taking and the making part of the process?
That's a great place to start. The distinction, I first came across it in a book by Dr. Fiona McPherson. I think it's called Effective Note-Taking. And the way that I grok this is that we take notes for different reasons. There are different modalities in which we take notes. And even though we use the same word, right? We use the same notes, the same word notes to talk about all these things. It's a different activity to be writing things down when you are listening to someone give a lecture or a presentation than when you are trying to do some kind of generative work, when you're organizing your thoughts. So an example of that might be sitting down to plan out a presentation yourself, right? Where you might start jotting down ideas, maybe doing a little bit of outlining. So for me, the distinction comes down to, are you trying to capture what you're hearing, which would be note-taking, versus are you trying to do some kind of generative, creative exercise, and that would be note-making. I find it a valuable distinction. And as you might expect, there are different note-taking and note-making media. There are some ways of doing these things that are more or less appropriate to the task at hand.
And for many of us, whether we consider ourselves creatives or not, the whole note-taking is so we can do the note-making ultimately, right?
That's right. We listen to lectures or maybe someone is taking notes right now, hearing us talk, right? But the reason we do these things is because we are, you know, a lot of us are curious. We want to learn. And many of us want to learn working towards something that we want to create. I think that there's a creativity is one of these things that we tend to put up in a pedestal and say, like, some people are so creative, you know, and we even in the design and in marketing world, there's some folks are referred to as creatives. It's like, I'm going to send that over to my creative, as though this was a skill that only some people have. But all of us are creative, right? In our dealings with each other, even if you don't work at a job where you think there is a lot of creativity in the sense that many of us imagine that to mean, all of us employ creativity and all of us to some degree or another do generative work. And the two activities, note-taking and note-making, go hand in hand for sure.
I can remember a time when essentially the only option you had for notes and categorizing and cataloging and collecting things was on paper using a pen or a pencil. And with so much coming at us from the digital sphere, and I think whether that's an ebook or like a podcast like this one or articles on the web or what have you, to me, it's almost impossible, not impossible, but nearly impossible or much harder to try to do this on paper. I'm convinced that digital is certainly the way to go. But what are, for those who might be slow to make that jump, what are some of the common criticisms of digital note-taking systems?
There's a an opinion piece that came out in the Wall Street Journal over a decade ago. I think it was 2011 by Marc Andreessen, where it's titled something like How Software is Eating the World, or Software is Eating the World, right? And it speaks to what you're talking about here, this idea that more and more things are becoming digital. And digital note-taking is certainly powerful. There's a lot to be said for it. There are downsides to digital note-taking. I think for me, the main one that I hear about and the main one that I sense myself is that digital note-taking can sometimes feel a little bit abstract. In that it is primarily text-based. And by text, I mean typed out, right? Like you are putting things down into text characters, words of the sort that you would read in a book, in contrast to handwritten. There is something about moving a pencil or a pen over the surface of paper that fosters a different type of thinking than when I'm going to speak about myself, than when I type something out. It's not that one is better than the other. They have different uses. Even though most of my knowledge management happens digitally, I still take a lot of notes by hand just because I like that connection, the state of flow that I get into when I am when I keep my hand moving over the surface of, in my case, an iPad, you know, I use a stylus, so it's still digital, but it's, you know, that connection with the lines that are drawn on the surface, I think it leads to a different kind of thinking. And there have been some studies, you might have seen these in publications like Psychology Today, suggesting that writing things down by hand carries some advantages over typing them out. The primary being that when we type things out, we tend to try to capture things verbatim just because many of us can type faster than we can write by hand. So there's something about both the connection with the paper and also the slower speed that leads to a different kind of thinking.
Yeah, and I guess we're in the cut from the same cloth there, because I certainly feel like they coexist, the handwritten with the digital. I guess I'm thinking more on the digital side from a storage standpoint, from a reference standpoint, more than anything else. When I read books, and I tend to prefer to read physical books, though I certainly appreciate the advantages of ebooks and how easy it is to capture highlights and have them synced, you know, in the background to your notes app. And I'll certainly take advantage of that on occasion. But I very much like reading physical books, holding that book in my hand. And when I read a physical book, I take notes by hand using a similar system of yours. I use a Remarkable tablet. I'm capturing them digitally, but I'm writing them in by hand. But that begs the question, okay, for those instances where we do capture things by hand, and it may vary depending on the situation, what advice would you give for then making sure we take the extra next step to store that digitally for future us to be able to come back to easily, more easily later than if it's stuffed in some notebook on a shelf somewhere?
Well, you're pointing to one of the advantages of digital over other media, which is that digital can include other media. So in the case of handwritten notes, if you're doing it on paper, there are fabulous applications now, mobile applications that allow you to use your phone as a scanner. This is something that I've worked with for a long time, over a couple of decades at this point, this question of how do you get your handwritten notes into digital form? And I've gone through the gauntlet of having flatbed scanners and then one of these duplex scanners where you feed the sheet in and it scans both sides. And both of those have a lot of constraints. They're for one thing, on your physical desktop. So if you're out and about, you can't use them. But it's also slow, right? Especially the flatbed scanner is kind of cumbersome. You have to open the thing, put the notebook down, scan it, et cetera. With these mobile apps, the phone becomes a scanner. Phones have fabulous cameras. They have more computation than our computers did even a few years ago. With the app that I use on, I'm on iOS, so it's an iOS app. It's called Scanner Pro by Riedel is the company, and this application is so easy to get this done. You just pull the thing out, open the page that you want to scan. You put the phone over it, and when it detects the edges of the page, it'll take the picture itself and then it'll correct perspective so that the sheet gets scanned like a proper scan. It'll also apply filters to turn it into a high contrast black and white image if that's what you want. So that's one thing that I would suggest. Look into using your mobile phone for that. Another advantage, obviously, is that you can use that anywhere. You can do it at a coffee shop, at the office, whatever. And then that application, and I'm sure that others do this as well, allows you to set the target directory for the scanned PDFs or images to be a cloud-based folder, such as in Dropbox or Google Drive, which you can obviously sync automatically to your computer. So, you know, that there's workflows that you can develop around scanning your handwritten notes and then importing them into your digital repository. Scanner Pro will also OCR your handwritten notes so that you can find stuff in them later. That's a feature that will vary tremendously depending on the clarity of your handwriting. But all these features allow you to build fairly easy workflows for doing this. Now, if you're using a digital tablet like the Remarkable or the iPad, those two have ways of syncing your notes with your other repositories of digital information. I don't have firsthand experience with the Remarkable, but with the iPad, I use an app called Notability, which has a similar feature to Scanner Pro in that my handwritten notes get backed up as PDFs overnight so that the next day I have a proper OCR PDF of my handwritten notes in my computer. And there I can just import it into my vault.
The promise of the Remarkable is taking your handwritten notes and turning them into text-based notes. But then I guess the clunky part of it is your options are to email those to yourself and then maybe copy those out of your email and paste them into your notes app. That's sort of the way it's done currently for most using a Remarkable and wanting to incorporate that with digital notes. I do happen to know that the folks at Readwise, which is an app that you and I both use to help sync various media to our notes app, is currently having their company retreat in Norway, which happens to be the headquarters for the Remarkable. So I'm hoping that there is something going on behind the scenes there. Those of us who use Readwise and Remarkable tablets hope to see something come out of that in the next few days. I don't know if there's a meeting going on between the two, but I'm doing some wishful thinking right now.
one could hope, right? I've used e-ink and Remarkable. If folks don't know, listening in, and Remarkable is an e-ink based device, right? So the promise there is that the surface of the screen looks much more like paper than it does something like an iPad, which looks more like a screen. It's reflective, particularly it looks like pencil on paper, right? So it's got this kind of like dark gray tone. And I've used devices like that for a long time, including Kindle devices, just not for note taking. I know that there are lots of other devices that compete with the Remarkable. There's books. I forget the name of the other one, but there's a few companies, and several of them use Android-based operating systems with access to the Google Store, meaning you can install apps. And I wonder if you can install the Readwise app onto them, because then, it's a similar thing, right? You get the benefits of having access to something like Readwise while also having this paper-like device.
Mm. We'll talk, Jorge, about what's ultimately crucial for us to know in order to take better notes, to take the kind of notes that will be more likely to be useful to us when we need them, when we need to create, when we need to share our work.
Well, the most important thing I think we've already hinted at, which is the idea that this word that we use, notes, actually refers to very different activities that we undertake for different purposes. And the first step is to kind of become more aware of all the things that you do that you think of as notes, but that are actually quite different. And then think about what might be the best medium to do that and the best form for the notes themselves. I'll give you an example. I think that this is kind of the canonical example. Mm. When we go out grocery shopping, again, I'll speak to myself. I have really bad memory, especially like short-term memory. So I often find myself standing in the middle of the grocery aisles wondering why I am in the supermarket. It's like, why did I come here after? So when we try to avoid this, right? So what many of us do is we will write a little list of things to buy at the grocery store in a scrap of paper. And then we do our shopping. When we get back home, that list isn't very useful, right? So we crumple it up, we toss it in the bin. And that's what I think of as a transient note. It's something that you're doing as a kind of short-term augmentation of your memory. That's not the only reason to use notes. We've already talked about generative note-taking, this idea that you're planning out a project or outlining a presentation. That's another one. And yet another kind of note that we take is when we are learning something. So right now I'm in the midst of learning everything I can about generative AI, and in particular, the relationship between large language models and knowledge graphs. That's something that's very interesting to me. It's germane to my work. And I am in the fortunate situation of being kind of a newbie in this stuff, right? And I say that, I say it's fortunate because when you are a novice at something, you ask what might seem like dumb questions, but they are really, they're the questions that take you on these interesting explorations, right? So I'm going through this process and I'm writing down things as I learn. And the ideas that I am picking up as I go through this exploration are things that hopefully I'll be referring back to as I learn more about these subjects. I don't know where this is going to take me, but I expect that these are technologies that I will be working with for the next few years. So these are things that are not transient in the same way that the grocery list is. These are notes that I will want to come back to and grow over time. And this is what is referred to in the field as evergreen notes. The first time I saw that phrase, I think, was in Andy Matushak's website. But it's an idea that's been making the rounds, right? Like there are some things that are for the moment that you want to get rid of, you know, or you will not have a use for after you use them. But there are some that will stick around. And being aware of which kind of note you're taking and why, just the awareness of that is going to help you select the right medium to do it. So I'll say that that's the most important thing, or where I would start at least.
Well, let's talk a bit about what I believe to be one of the most powerful uses of digital notes apps in particular, and that is the ability to connect existing ideas to new ideas. How do we connect notes for the uninitiated to create a network of ideas?
Yeah, the best way to get into the subject is to contrast it with the way that most of us have taken notes throughout our lives. Mm. The way that I did it when I was a kid, and I suspect that this is how many people get started with notes, is I would sit in the classroom writing down what the teacher said, right? So I was taking notes on lectures, and I would capture them either in notebooks or in binders. In the 80s, we had Trapper Keepers. That was the preferred brand, right? And at the end of the semester, I would have this binder filled with notes that were organized by section. And the sections were invariably reflective of the classes I was taking. So there was a section for biology, a section for history, a section for math, physics, or what have you, right? So each section represented a subject. And then within each section, the notes were organized chronologically in the order that they were taken. Those notes captured a lot of ideas because teachers would talk about stuff. And sometimes ideas might come up in the context of one subject that might be germane to another subject. Mm. But because of the nature of the medium of note-taking, paper, it's kind of linear. You're taking the ideas in the order you hear them, not in the order that they might, you know, it's not easy to draw these connections, right? Mm. So that's what you might think of as linear note-taking. In a binder, you at least have the advantage that you can take sheets out and move them around. Mm. In a bound notebook, you can't do that, right? So they are very much linear. Now, if we contrast that with computers, the way that they save information is not linear, or it doesn't have to be linear. You can have what is called random access, right? Like you don't have to flip from the front to the back in order to find what you're looking for. Mm. If you know the location of the file or the note or whatever, you can point to it directly, right? Mm. An analogy here might be something like Wikipedia. You don't read Wikipedia the same way that you read a book from the front to the back, right? Mm. Wikipedia is something that you hop around in. And what's happened, particularly in the last 4 years or so, well, I'll say this, people have known that you can do this with computers for a long time. There have been experiments in hypertext and hypermedia since at least the 1960s. But tools to do this have been fairly specialized, mostly for use in research contexts. There was an exception in the mid 80s. Apple published a tool called HyperCard, which was a hypertext hypermedia really tool. But that's more the exception than the rule. For the most part, most digital note-taking tools have echoed or mirrored the way that physical notebooks are structured. And they've done this for the purpose of familiarity, to make it easy to get into. Mm-hmm. What's happened over the last 4 years or so is that there have started to appear in the market more consumer-friendly tools that are actually oriented towards this kind of hypertext way of working. And in Duly Noted, I offer three basic principles for working with ideas in this form. The first principle is that you should aim to take short notes. And by short notes, I don't necessarily mean the length of them. I mean really that each note should be focused on one idea. I said earlier that I'm investigating the relationship between language models and knowledge graphs. So a knowledge graph might be an idea, right? And I might start a little note in my system to talk about that or to think about that. And then the second principle is that when you have lots of these shorter notes, you should aim to connect your notes. Now, how do you do that? These hypertext note-taking systems let you easily create links between notes in the system. And when I say links, think like web links, right? Like of the sort that Wikipedia employs. So if I have a note for knowledge graphs and a note for language models, I might, somewhere in the text that I'm writing as I'm going through this investigation, I might say, I don't know, I'm going to make it up, but knowledge graphs can be connected to or can be developed by language models. And then the word language models becomes a link to the other note, right? The note about language models. The third principle is that you need to nurture your notes. So if you go back to the trapper keeper, the binder, right? Like at the end of the semester, I had this collection of notes. And when the final exam was done for each subject, I was done with those notes and I would toss them, right? I don't know what happened to them. They got lost. And I kind of regret that, right? Like I wish that I could go back and reference the things I learned. But with digital, you don't have to toss things. They don't take up as much space as paper notebooks do, right? So you can keep them around for a long time. And I'm sure that I am going to learn much more about language models and knowledge graphs over the years. And it's good to have a place in my system that I can return to where I can keep expanding my thoughts on that idea. That requires circling back to them, right? So this notion of nurturing. So again, the three principles: take short notes, link them, and then nurture them. And I find that it's a different mindset that leads to a different way of thinking, not just about the notes, but thinking about the way that we think, right?
When it's all said and done, why is it important to share what we learn, to share our thinking in your view?
Sharing our thinking is a critical part of the process. And I'll address your question, but I'll say before going there, that even if you don't share, the process has value. The ultimate outcome of a knowledge management system, of a knowledge garden, is the phrase that that I use in the book. It's a metaphor that has a long history in this field, the botanical metaphor. The ultimate purpose of building one of these systems is not, in fact, to make things like books or YouTube videos or whatever it is that you're looking to make. The ultimate objective is to think more effectively. Now, that said, I consider it important to share what you're working on. And at a minimum, the reason why I think it matters is because it lets you check your thinking with other people. Feedback is an essential part of the process. And my ideas are often wrong, right? And I won't know if they're wrong, or I won't know in what ways they're wrong unless I bring them up with other people and discuss them. And the sort of thing that you and I are doing now, conversation, is an important part of how we think. There's this line of research in the field of cognitive science around what is called the extended mind theory. And one of the things that this line of thinking proposes is that our thinking doesn't happen exclusively in the brain, in our nervous system. Our thinking happens as we interact with our environments, things in our environment, and other beings, people in our environment. Notes are a part of that. We think differently when we can write things down on paper. And talking about what we're doing is a part of that. Writing and publishing is a part of that. And you share something in a blog post or in Twitter/X, right? And people start writing back, hopefully politely, right? They'll say, you know, well, you got this wrong, or have you considered this angle? All of those things shift your thinking a little bit. They make your ideas, in some ways, they make your ideas stronger because they expose them to other perspectives. Diversity of perspectives can help make ideas stronger. So that's the primary reason why I think it's important to share stuff.
Couple more questions before we wrap up. I want to ask you about maintenance of the garden. I think a lot of people get stuck when it comes to the pruning, as it were, and keeping their knowledge garden well maintained. Again, so that at the end of the day, you know, future you comes to this with much of the work already having been done. I mean, Tiago Forte talks about that a bit in building a second brain. If you do it right, when you sit down to create, 80% of the work's already been done, right?
Right. Yeah. And there's a few principles that you can employ to make things more findable and more understandable in the long term for future you. And there's several suggestions as to how you might do that in the book, which we're likely not going to have time to get into. But I will say that it's important to maintain the garden at several levels. On one level, it's important for you to nurture your content. We've already gone through that, right? Like the idea that you circle back and expand on things. I'm less keen on deleting things. Computers have almost unlimited storage at this point, especially if you're working with text. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's diminishing returns with deleting stuff. But making sure that stuff is findable when you need it is pretty important. Again, there are ways that you can tag information to make it more findable. But so that's one level. That's the level of content, you might say. Another level at which you need to maintain the garden is at the level of the tools you use, in that technology is continually evolving. And every once in a while, there are new tools that you might want to consider adopting. We were just talking about these hypertext note-taking tools that have started becoming more popular over the last 4 years or so. Every once in a while, you know, it behooves you to look around, see what's out there, see what might be helpful to you. So that's another level at which you might want to do it. There's also the level of your processes, your habits, you know, making sure that you're making the time to do it. Having reasons to do it is a good way to make the time, right? If you mm-hmm. commit to writing a book, that's going to kind of force you to do this, right? So there's things that you can do along those lines. But I will wrap up these thoughts with a caveat, which is unfortunately one of the occupational hazards of doing this kind of knowledge work, in that it's fairly easy to become distracted with tools and processes at the expense of actually doing the work. I make the distinction between work and meta work. Work is the time that you spend working with ideas, reading, annotating, thinking about things. And then meta work is all the time that you spend setting up the environment that is going to allow you to do that and working on the tools that allow you to do that. And for a segment of the population that I count myself a part of, playing around with these tools is a lot of fun. And it's fairly easy, you know, it's fairly easy to become distracted implementing new tools, trying out new approaches, reorganizing your tags, doing all this stuff. And it feels like you're doing productive work. But in fact, what you're doing is it's like you've discovered a fun new way to procrastinate, right? So I think that it's really important to keep in mind that the ultimate goal here is to think more effectively. Mm-hmm. The ultimate goal here is not to take notes. And this is yet again, something that I learned from Andy Matushak. He put it really cleanly. I'm not going to be able to quote him verbatim, but the ultimate point is not taking better notes. The ultimate point is thinking more effectively. Mm-hmm. And if the tools are getting in the way, by all means, get rid of the tools, right? Mm. The point is to think better, not to take better notes.
Well said. You mentioned generative AI earlier, language models, knowledge graphs, and how they're impacting your work. How does AI play into all this? A couple of things that I'm excited about, and maybe you can speak to this or other thoughts you have on the subject. You and I talked the other day about, you know, maybe the day coming where AI makes organization unnecessary when it comes to our knowledge. Or connected to that, ChatGPT, for example, already, you know, queries the world's knowledge when we pose it a question. How about a chatbot that queries my knowledge specifically, right? I mean, those exist, right? Those are out there. People are building them. That excites me a great deal. When it comes to those things, language models, knowledge graphs, generative AI, what are your thoughts on how that impacts your work and the work of people like us?
Well, I just mentioned that you always need to be on the lookout for new tools that might help you. And this is certainly the one that looms largest, at least for me, is all of the technologies that we now refer to under the AI umbrella, which I might say in the way of a parenthesis, I find to be a bit of a misnomer. Mm. You know, artificial intelligence both oversells the capabilities of the technology and also doesn't do it justice in a very strange way. The way I think of these things like language models is as incredibly powerful text processors, perhaps the most powerful we've ever had. And if you are managing your knowledge as text in the way that we have been hinting at in this conversation, And all of a sudden, you get access to incredibly powerful language processors. You're going to be able to do things that would have been difficult to do at scale otherwise, such as summarizing vast amounts of text, perhaps finding relationships between ideas that might have eluded you just because of the scale at which you're working. I use a note-taking tool called Obsidian. It is one of these tools that we're talking about. And Obsidian has a fairly rich third-party plugin ecosystem. And among these plugins, there are a couple that let you bring the power of language models to working with your notes. I'm experimenting right now with one of those plugins. It's called Smart Connections, which looks at the text of whatever note you have open at the time on the screen, and it brings up a list of other notes in your vault that might somehow be related to that one, right? So if you've been doing this for a while, you talked about future you, you probably have a lot of stuff in there that's gotten quite stale. And this is a great way to resurface ideas and to do the nurturing, right? Like the going back and saying, oh yeah, I did read about this a long time ago in this book. And all of a sudden you have this assistant that can go through text much faster than you can. Another obvious way in which these things might be useful is by having them use the corpus of your notes as the subject through to which you can ask questions of the sort that you ask with ChatGPT. There's this technique that goes by the acronym RAG. I think it stands for Retrieval Augmented Generation. I forget the exact source of the acronym. But the idea is that you use a language model such as GPT-4 and have it go through a particular corpus, right? And that lets you do things like ask questions of your own notes, right? Of the sort that you ask with ChatGPT. The possibilities for that kind of interaction, I think, are immense. And we're only starting to see the beginnings of it. I'm super excited about this stuff.
Yeah, I'm particularly excited about something you mentioned. And it's those times when, whether it's AI or your notes app or a combination of the two, bring together what may on the surface seem like disparate ideas that actually have a connection that, as you said, you wouldn't have maybe otherwise noticed. The sort of serendipitous opportunities that these kinds of tools create, I think, is pretty exciting. One last question, and it's related to books, and whether it's books on this topic or others, and you've mentioned one or two already. You mentioned quite a few in your book. What are some books you read recently that have had a particular impact on you and your work that you'd like to recommend to others?
That's one of my favorite prompts, and it's one that might derail us just because it's there's so many.
One, I guess it's good I asked it last, huh?
yeah, for sure. One that I would recommend for sure, we were talking about the extended mind, the extended mind stuff in cognitive science. There's a really good book on this subject by Annie Murphy-Paul called The Extended Mind. You've got it right there. I really like that book. It's a really good introduction to this area of research. Another one, this one is perhaps a little bit more philosophical, but it's a book that has had a really important impact in my life, is a book called Finite and Infinite Games by James P. Carse.
Okay.
It's a book about how to approach life. I guess that sounds really highfalutin, but I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying that the book offers a contrast between finite and infinite games, as suggested by the title. And the basic distinction is this: finite games are games that we play with the objective of winning, and infinite games are games that we play with the objective of keeping the game in play. And I won't give you a spoiler by saying which one Carse believes we should aim for, but I will say that I consider myself an infinite player, and I'm hoping that my own book, Duly Noted, is a contribution to helping people live more open-ended lives of infinite play.
Well, Jorge's book, again, is called Duly Noted, Extend Your Mind Through Connected Notes. Jorge, this has been a treat. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I know that not just those who've gone through note-making mastery, but everybody listening is going to get a lot out of this conversation and learn from it. And the best part is, I know they're going to put it to use. So thank you very much for being here.
Jeff, it's been a treat. Thank you so much.
If you'd like to dig deeper into this topic, you may be the perfect candidate for my note-making mastery course. You can find out more about it at that same website where you can find out about a Read to Lead Plus membership. That website, again, is jeffbrown.me. There's currently a self-paced version of the course available at that website. You get immediate access to the entire course and can take the modules at any pace you like. Plus, join a community of hundreds of people who've already gone through the course, ask questions of them, ask questions of me as well. We'd love to have you. Just go to jeffbrown.me to find out more, not only on Note Making Mastery, but a Read to Lead Plus membership as well. Thank you so much for joining me. That's it for this week. I hope to see you next time. And until then, as always, remember, leaders read and readers lead.